let's see. I will go around and greet everybody, then think about any announcements, starting with Drew and Janelle, Linda R, Susan, Peter, Mark, Bob, Shoketsu, Paulette, Jinryu, Jim, Aaron, Deborah, Marv, Jeff, Tyler, Gaffel, Linda, Mick, Vin, and John. So welcome. Let's see. In terms of announcements, Saturday we have a one-day retreat. If you, I don't know that anybody has signed up for it. I apologize because if you did register for it, I've got a record of it. I just might be spacing it. You don't have to register for it, but it is nice for me to know that I won't be sitting by myself. But even if there's a few of us, that's fine. You can participate part-time if you want as well. There's a if you go to the Bright Ways Inn website and to the calendar, and you know the retreat is on there, it'll pull up a schedule for you so you can see what the day is like. So looking forward to that. I guess oh, in the newsletter there was a note about I think it's Tuesday, May 4th. Okay, so that's coming up. There's I think it's about 4 p.m. Pacific time. There's a online gathering to honoring Asian Buddhist ancestors. So this is something that was put together. It's a national thing. So if you see, we link to it in the newsletter. I don't think I have anything about it on the website, but if you are curious about attending that via Zoom, just email me info@brightwaysend.org and I'll give you the information, but or check the last newsletter. In terms of people taking the precepts, so you will have so once a year we have our Jukai ceremony where people receive the precepts and formally become a Buddhist. And this isn't something that you need to rush into or anything. It's something we do every year. You are welcome to study the precepts, keep the precepts, think of yourself as a Buddhist without receiving Jukai, or you know, receive Jukai next year when it feels, you know, like you appreciate it more. But I do, it's good to have been involved with Bright Way for at least a few months and to have attended all these precept classes. And if you can't attend a particular class, listen to the recording and ideally also be reading one of the recommended books on the precepts. And definitely, if you are thinking about receiving the precepts this year, please, and we are going to make that possible for people who are at a distance as well. So if you are thinking about that, please email me about your intention. I know there's a few people already that I've corresponded with about that, but if you haven't corresponded with me yet, please do so. And then the plan was also for us to meet one-on-one sometime in May after you've got a few precept classes under your belt. And June 27th is the Jukai ceremony, so you would need to be available for that in whatever time zone you're in. Okay, I think that's it. Any questions or additional announcements that I have missed? Okay. Drew will be leading our class tonight on the precept, do not steal, honor the gift not yet given. And I believe he's going to be sharing his screen sometimes. Drew, if you're not sharing your screen, I'm probably going to spotlight your video so that you're big and everybody else is, so that people don't have to be like looking around to find you. But please know that if I spotlight someone and they become big and you actually want gallery view, you can toggle back to gallery view on your own screen. You can undo my spotlight, if you will. And if we have any discussion or any issues, don't forget the reactions button. On a computer anyway, it's the bottom of your screen where you can choose a little raised hand thing. And with that, I will turn it over to Drew.
Okay. Wow. Domio has been billing these precept lessons as kind of guidance from senior students. And I took the precepts about 2 years ago in May of 2019. So I hope I can live up to the billing, but I do feel like maybe there is something, there's a lot to be said for being a beginner at anything, but Zen as well, right? Zen mind, beginner's mind. What it reminds me of is I used to be an educator at an observatory. So, you know, I do like night sky programs, viewing through telescopes, things like that. And so I find my way around the sky pretty well. I know I'm kind of breaking a precept when I say this, because I'm kind of jealous of, and you're supposed to be jealous of nothing, but kind of jealous of the people who would come to visit the observatory who weren't familiar with the night sky and could just look up at it with a greater sense of wonder, where, you know, I'm looking at it, oh yeah, there's Bootes, there's Hercules, there's North Star. And so it's more like connecting the dots for me, and so kind of not being able to see that the forest for the trees. So I feel like it's relevant for me to share just a little bit about how I came to Zen. So I mean, I did like the mindfulness-based stress reduction, and I've been kind of interested in meditation for a long time, like decades, but what really kind of pushed me was this kind of surprising source here. It's getting blurred out. Kind of put it in front of my face. Okay. anyhow, this is the book called, it's called The Island, or I guess it's actually just Island. By Aldous Huxley. You may know Aldous Huxley. He wrote Brave New World. That was either his first book or one of his first books. Island was actually his last book, published, I think, in the mid-1950s. And it's about this guy who's really kind of like mixed up, has his values all backward, and he finds himself kind of stranded on this island called Pala. And it's kind of this Buddhist utopia that's like this merging of like Buddhist philosophy and Western science. And it's really cool. So I thought I'd share with you just a passage about like what kind of like, it's like, oh yeah, this makes sense. This is what kind of brought me in a little bit. So here's the passage. "Attention," a voice began to call, and was though an oboe had suddenly become articulate. "Attention," repeated in the same high nasal monotone. "Attention. Is that your bird?" Will asked. Will's the protagonist. She shook her head. "Minas are like the electric light," she said. "They don't belong to anybody." So mina is a type of bird. "Why does he say these things?" "Because somebody taught him," she answered patiently. "But why did they teach him those things? Why attention? Why here and now?" "Well," she searched for the right words in which to explain the self-evident to the strange imbecile. "That's what you always forget, isn't it? I mean, you forget to pay attention to what's happening. And that's the same as not being here and now. And the minas fly about reminding you. Is that it?" She nodded. That, of course, was it. There was a silence. So after that, playing around online, and I did the good old search through Google Buddhist temples near me, and it turned out to be that Right Way Zen was the closest one. So I said, okay, I'll go there first, and we'll just see how it goes. It just felt right. The precepts made a lot of sense to me. Just like a lot of what I was learning about had already kind of fit in with my existing creed. So it was maybe kind of like a seamless transition. I think when I took the precepts, I didn't really know fully what I was getting into, and I still probably don't know. But my instinct was just to leap without looking and just take the dang things and run with it. So here I am, and I'll do my best to present the second precept to you. And it might be a little unconventional, but I think that could work to my advantage and to your advantage, more importantly. Okay, so I am going to share my screen here, if I can find the button again, share screen, there it is. Okay, can everybody see my, actually that's not the title slide, sorry. Everybody see that okay? Give me like a thumbs up or something, or
yes.
Okay, good. Like to make sure that things are working. Let me make this thing full screen. Display settings swap. Okay. So do not steal, honor the gift not yet given. So that's the second grade precept. And then I've got Fight Club over here. Fabulous, absolutely excellent movie from 1999. So many of you have read Why Buddhism is True by Robert Wright. We did that as part of our Zen group a year or so ago, I think. Just a fantastic book. Aside from being relevant to what we do, it's entertaining. And in that book, he mentions The Matrix and how The Matrix is a Dharma movie. And he likens being a Buddhist to taking the red pill. So there's that famous scene in The Matrix, and Neo chooses the red pill to see how deep the rabbit hole goes, and he learns what The Matrix is and all this. So my contention is that Fight Club is another such movie, another Dharma movie. And it seemed particularly relevant to the second precept here, because a lot of it is about like rejecting the importance of materialistic possessions. So Tyler Durden is played by Brad Pitt over here. Ed Norton is here. He is just the narrator. If you haven't seen this movie, go watch it. I don't want to reveal too much about who Ed Norton plays. And then this other quote, it's only after we've lost everything that we're free to do anything. So the things you own end up owning you. And it's only after we've lost everything that we're free to do anything. Okay, so what are the precepts? I'm getting to the second precept. This is just a little bit of a roundabout route here. Actually, I think I'm gonna end my slideshow and just kind of show it over here so I can see my notes at the same time. I'm kind of stealing from you a little bit. This is in your Zen for Dummies book. Maybe I'm paraphrasing. I don't know if this is verbatim, but essentially what you write is the precepts are a reference from which direction is obtained. So I'm kind of referring that to a compass, and really what orients you is like your heart of hearts, right? I mean, like deep down, I think we all have kind of like a sense of like what the right thing to do is, what the compassionate thing is to do is. And if we are able to follow that needle, then you know, you can't really, you can't go away from suffering, right? You can't run because running is suffering. So you have to pass through it. And then my final thought here in the slide is that Graves precepts are not really different from one another. They're not the same. I feel like I can see the other precepts within the second precept and vice versa. So when I think of like the 10 precepts, I think of each one being like a flashlight that is illuminating some part of a larger object. And for me, like the root of all of the Graves precepts is it's the pure precepts, the three pure precepts, but especially the first one, release all self-attachment. So I feel like you can't fully follow any of these precepts without releasing self-attachment, and vice versa. If you are following these precepts perfectly, you will release all self-attachment. So that was my thought there. Let's see. Oh, I guess I just did want to say one other thing about that. So I just kind of noticed this a couple of days ago. So in the precepts, I still got this little pamphlet that will probably be all blurry. But it's the little pamphlet with the Bodhisattva precepts on it. And then, you know, so I'm reading through it. There's, you know, the precept, do not kill, cultivate and encourage life. And then in the realm of the et cetera, in the realm of the whatever Dharma. And then there's a paragraph after that. So like for do not kill, it's the life of Buddha increases with life. No life can be cut off. Continue the life of Buddha. Do not kill Buddha. So for the second precept, I'll just read the whole thing since that's what we're talking about. Do not steal, honor the gift not yet given. In the realm of the unattainable Dharma, holding no thought of gain is the precept of not stealing. So kind of let that rumble around in your head for a little bit, holding no thought of gain. So the self and the things of this world are just as they are. The mind and its object are one. The gateway to enlightenment stands open wide. So in that second little paragraph there, like the self and the things of this world are just as they are, it seems like for each precept, it's actually a description of enlightenment. I mean, the one for intoxicated, do not become intoxicated, it says in that second paragraph, this is enlightenment itself. So I never really noticed that before. And so maybe that's kind of like extra evidence that all these precepts are tied together. Okay, so here it is, if you don't have it right in front of you. I took a lot of material, a lot of my thoughts came out of, and Domio mentioned this a few weeks ago, and I wasn't even aware this book existed, and she said it was her favorite, and I got it on my Kindle, and I think it's a really good book. I enjoyed reading it. So the way that this precept is phrased in that book is, I take up the way of taking only what is freely given and giving freely of all that I can. So I might kind of come back to this, like this rephrasing of the second precept. But for now, I'd like to, maybe we can talk about some examples of you guys, you know, some examples of stealing and giving as well, because the precept is just about as much about stealing as it is about giving. So, I mean, I think we can kind of get like the obvious materialistic, like, you know, don't steal somebody's wallet, you know, or, you know, go work in a soup kitchen. You know, maybe we can kind of get those like out of the way and maybe think of some things that you can practice in life or things that you've seen that are good examples of stealing or giving. So I'll just be quiet and I think I'll just keep the whole room together here and let you guys chime in.
Should we go back to gallery view, Drew?
Yeah, that would be fine.
All right. Looks like Mick.
Hi. It's interesting because I understand all the precepts to be kind of woven together, and I don't want to rehash an argument or a discussion that we had last week, but when I kind of read this precept, it made me think a lot about my diet, and in particular the like eating meat, because that is certainly a gift that is not freely given by whatever animal has ended up on my plate. And I think about that a lot now. When I eat things and when I see food, I think, man, I don't think that thing is freely given to me. And I think about all of the things that we're taking from the earth that is not freely given to us. That's kind of like the first place where my mind went with that.
That's a good one. That's not one I had thought of.
Tyler, and then Franklin. Go ahead, Tyler.
I didn't hear that. I apologize. So last year I hired this painter to come and paint our house. A nice young guy, and he had all this stuff, and he got about three quarters of the way done one afternoon and left for lunch and never came back. Ladders up against the house, like paint sprayer, machine out, toolbox, all on the lawn. Never came back that day. Sent texts. Never responded to texts. I haven't paid him a dime. He just disappeared. And I've heard some other people that they're like, well, I've seen his van around town. Like he's like, I was worried he was hurt or like something terrible happened, of course. But he just never came back. And so I'm sitting, and there it's literally still there. I have two ladders, like brand new ladder, paint sprayer. I'll just do that. And everyone's like, well, just sell it. Like, just unload it. I was like, every so often, I'm like, yeah, I just need to like, and I'm like, but it's not mine, right? Like, I mean, I don't know how long I have to hold on to it, but it's this funny thing of being like, maybe if I had paid him some money, I would have like, it felt like I could have gotten at least that back. Every so often, I'm like, I just need to sell it or like cut it. And then someone said, oh, I think I see his van parked down in the street. I think that's where he lives. And so now I feel like, do I need to go physically return these? Anyways, but it was just this really funny thing of being like, I've just been storing this guy's stuff now. I left it on the side of my house just because you want to come back at night and get it just so he didn't have to like see me or whatever. That's fair. Just to take it away and start over. I don't know. Anyway, but it's the one that always pops into my head of like, I don't think it would be stealing at this point, but it certainly was not like something given to me to get away. So that was kind of an interesting one that always pops into my head. Because everyone assumes I now should have some right of it being mine just because it was left here. And I think some days I feel like I should. The other days I'm like, no, I just need to find a way to get it back to him. Okay. That's all.
Franklin.
Yeah, that's so weird, Tyler. Let's see, what was I thinking? Just like taking credit for things that you really shouldn't be taking credit for. I mean, and I think conversely, anytime you try to position yourself vis-a-vis, but by I don't know, kind of like placing yourself above someone else in a sense. Hard to for me to think of good examples of, but like anytime you kind of just like minimize someone or somehow do, some kind of action where either you're taking credit or somehow your actions will sort of prop you up while putting somebody else down. That's something I think about in this context. Thanks.
That's such an example, like Drew was saying, that all the precepts contain all the other precepts. Like, this is the stealing one. And, you know, we've already talked about not killing and not, like, that praising self and blaming other thing. So it's interesting how both of those things can be looked at as stealing. It's really cool. Deborah.
Hi. So when I was thinking about this, I was thinking about my job. And I'm an academic advisor at a university, and I have 600 students, and all of them need something right now. And so I have all of these emails that need responding to right now. I have a student in front of me on Zoom who needs responding to. And I find that I'm reserving things back so that I can be paying attention to two or three different things at the same time. And for me, the giving freely might be to let things go except for what's in front of me right now.
Susan?
What?
Oh, are you next? It looks like you raised your hand.
Who? Did you not? Me?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, my hand is there.
Okay.
What I was thinking of is sometimes I'm reluctant to give my time. I mean, I have time, I'm retired, but, you know, if a friend needs my help and I have other plans, and I'll help, but sometimes I feel sort of reluctant. I'm not giving it willingly, and I sort of feel bad about that.
Susan, I have kind of similar experiences, and I feel like one of my where I really struggle with this precept is with being on time to stuff, to meetings or whatever it is. Because, you know, I mean, sometimes like you can't make something and it can't be helped, right? But most of the time it's like, if you just thought it through a little bit better or been less selfish, you know, you could have made it there on time. And so like when you're late to a meeting, then the other person is waiting on you. And effectively, you're devaluing and stealing their time, right? So I think time is a good one.
Paulette?
I'm kind of stealing this example from a book. The Kite Runner by Colette Osini. And he says, when you don't tell someone the truth, you steal their right to knowing. And I think about that, like when I am not forthcoming, which I also connects to another precept, you're stealing someone's right to knowing and maybe learning something or being able to reflect on themselves. And so this idea of like, you know, I mean, I'm in the term student group and I keep thinking about right speech, and it's just, you know, when is it right to say something? When is it better to hold back? And, you know, and then now this comes up where, when are you stealing someone's right to knowing the truth or knowing something that would maybe benefit them or in the long term or be beneficial in some way? Thank you. That's all I wanted to say.
Oh, Peter's got his hand up. So I will hold what I was going to say and
I'm going to be real brief. I just want to say that to give freely, we have to feel like we own it to begin with. And I just want to sympathize with Susan You know, when she's not sure whether to give her time, she may not be really feeling like she owns her time. You know, I don't want to say I know Susan, but I can tell you that I wonder, you know, does my higher power want me to do this or that? And so, you know, I'm not giving myself the permission to own my own time, perhaps.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting thought. And you guys are all saying all sorts of good things that will tie in together to what is coming up. So this is going in the direction that I wasn't anticipating it, but it's good. Feel free to, you know, raise your hand if you have something else to say, but I'll add a couple of things that I thought of that are maybe not that obvious. So in Waking Up to What You Do, the author mentions a situation where she's got some friend who's always asking for money to pay off the rent. And, you know, at some point she has to make the hard decision to say no, because she feels like she's supporting him. She didn't really go into a bunch of detail, but because she's supporting him and not doing what he needs to do to get himself up on his feet. So what she says is sometimes the way to give is not to give. So I thought that was a good example. And then the other thing, sometimes when people make an offer of help to you, like I can think of all sorts of times when people have offered to like hold doors when I'm carrying like heavy furniture and things like that. And it's like, no, I got it. You're actually kind of stealing from both yourself and the person who wants to help you, because helping you makes them feel good. It feels good to help people. And then you might also miss out on a good feeling of being helped, and you know, you miss out on having a door open for you. So it's another one I thought of.
Jinmu's got her hand up.
Yeah, I think I've struggled with this one this evening. I'm not sure why. I think Mick's example about what we've just taken from the earth is just excellent. I think the comment you just made, Drew, is also an excellent one. I've often said that to people, because it's hard to ask for help. And I always tell them, if you don't ask for help, you're robbing me of the opportunity to help you, because it's a pleasure. If you have the time and if you want to do it, it's a pleasure to give somebody a hand. The one I was just sort of thinking about as you got to talking, Drew, was the habit that we all have of making an assumption, especially about, not necessarily about a person, but about the way things are in this moment. You know, if I leap to the conclusion that, you know, I can't think of anything. Oh, this trip's going to be, oh, I just don't even want to go. It's just going to be awful. And, you know, I don't like the person I'm going with very much, and it's just, you know, I just wish I weren't doing it. Well, I'm robbing time. I'm making assumptions about the present moment that I have no idea about, truly. If I'm really honest with myself, I have no idea. It could be wonderful. And so I'm just robbing myself of the experience of living in this very moment as it is.
So Jinryu, what you just said is, it reminds me of what Aitken writes in The Mind of Clover. It's on page 28. There are many ways of stealing from oneself, some of them in the dojo itself. The theft of time is one. Yamamoto Genpo Roshi used to call this kind of stealing the greatest felony of all. We take time on our cushions to indulge in all kinds of silly business, and the biological clock ticks away relentlessly. We also take time from our lives as bodhisattvas for all kinds of foolishness, altogether out of proportion to our natural needs for leisure. These are habits, beings with their own life force that we must acknowledge and engage in dialogue. So I'll stop there. So yeah, the Aitken talks a lot about stealing from yourself, almost as much as he talks about stealing from others. And it reminds me of, another quote from Fight Club is, this is your life and it's ending 1 minute at a time. So that speaks to the preciousness of life and how if we don't pay attention, we're kind of stealing from ourselves the present moment, our experience of being in it.
Franklin.
Yeah, maybe you're going to get to this, Drew. I don't know, but I'll throw it out here. So part of what your precept, what it says is honor the gift not yet given. And I don't really understand that. I've been trying to wrap my head around that. And usually with Zen, I can make up my own, come to my own conclusions, whether they're right or wrong. But this one kind of baffles me. So I'm wondering if you're planning on talking about that at all.
You know, that actually, so now you're taking me to an uncomfortable place because this is not something I understand especially well either. So I haven't prepared anything, but just kind of like my best thought off the top of my head is that you'll eventually get like all that you need, right? I mean, honor the gift not yet given, essentially everything you need to sustain yourself and fulfill the Buddha way, like that'll all eventually be there. Maybe it's one of those things over many lifetimes or whatever, but that's how I interpret it.
Janelle?
Thanks.
Oh, I'm unmuted. Yay, I did it. one of the ways that I've thought about this, and especially the honor, the gift not yet given, is that I tend to put a lot of pressures on my relationships that they should meet an expectation, like we should be getting together a certain amount of time and that time should be of a certain quality. And the part about not taking what's not willingly given is giving space to other people to give me of themselves and to be secure enough in that I can honor the gift not yet given, that these relationships have gifts in them and they will be forthcoming if I can be patient enough not to always put this pressure on and they're not willingly giving them to me yet. So if I can give that space and patience, and the gift is coming, and then they'll be willing to give it to me instead of this like, oh geez, I haven't talked to Janelle in 2 days and I know she's gonna text me, so I better get to it. You know, it puts a whole different like flavor to the relationship.
Yeah, thanks, that's kind of useful. It made me think about expectations, and that's something I think about a lot these days. And so kind of tying those two things together sort of kind of makes some sense to me. So that's great. Thanks.
So let's have Peter go. He has his hand raised, and then I want to move along so we can get through everything.
I'm going to just say the gift not yet given has nothing to do with us. You know, I'm going to just So talk about the fox and the grapes. You know, the fox is down on the ground and it sees a bunch of grapes up in the tree. It's not personal that, you know, the grapes are high so that the fox can't reach it. And probably, I don't mean to say I know why the grapes are up where they are, but in short, I just want to say that I certainly benefit from honoring things that I would like to have, but let's say, you know, let's say I'm that fox and I want those grapes. Those grapes, it's my life benefits when I honor those grapes. They look good. They probably taste good. They may not be mine, but I do like beholding them.
So, I mean, lots of great ideas and good discussion. So thank you everybody for contributing. The next thing I wanted to bring up, let's see. So even within the precepts, which are kind of like these fundamental, fundamental truths, fundamental values, there lie like even more fundamental questions. So like, I kind of brought this up when Gatha was speaking last week. So do not kill. So what does that mean? I mean, what is it to kill, and what is life? Or if I were to look at the misused sexuality precept, like, what is sexuality? What is intimacy? Like, those are like kind of even more deeper questions that I feel like need to be answered first. So I have a couple of questions to ponder here on a slide. So hopefully people can see these. I crossed off the first one because I feel like I don't think we have time to discuss it further. And I feel like we've covered it pretty well. And it's something that you can think about on your own. So yeah, like where did the precepts show up inside of each other? This middle one is good, but really kind of the one I'd like to focus on the most is what does it mean to own something? What do we own, if anything? So Peter mentioned like owning one's time. I don't know. My feeling is ownership is kind of a construct, right? I mean, the United States owns Guam, or like, I mean, it's for like borders or things like that. That's all just like human constructs, fabrications. And so it really kind of what makes me wonder, like, what does it mean to own something? So I'll let people chime in on either one of these for a few minutes here.
Mick?
Yeah, I think about this like maybe more often than I would like when I'm sitting. I can kind of see my baseboard along the wall when I sit. And I think about that because I think, well, this is my house, but that baseboard is made of wood. And that wood was a living tree at some point, and it was nourished by the sun and by the soil. And like, do I own that? Did I own the tree when it was a tree, and now it's become this thing in my house? Like, I don't know the answer to that. And like, I don't know, but I think about this one a lot. And I got to tell you, I haven't come up with anything good. I don't know.
That's just such a huge question. And I mean, the United States has
very, very strong property rights. So, I mean, it's very invested in people owning things. It's just one of the strongest, you know, strongest things that our society kind of believes in. And I just think you can see how much strife it can cause. Now, like I often kind of think, wouldn't it be lovely if we had more like common spaces and things that we shared? And yeah, we just think that that's really the direction we kind of need to go in. So, not sure if it fits the precept exactly, but it's just, it's kind of what we swim in. It's the milieu that we swim in. We know very often, unconsciously even, who owns what. Yeah.
Thank you. Tyler?
Yeah, I've always felt pretty like clear about, I never struggle with the idea of like who owns water. But with it, it's getting kind of the cases that more and more things are being ownable that weren't ownable before. So like with the rise of NFTs or non-fixed tradables, transferables, it was this sort of like, I still cannot wrap my head fully around what it is, but it's like owning, you know, memes or like cyber things. And like, they just like, they create this increased commodification. And then there's, you know, people own and sell water and these sorts of things that should be sort of common goods. And it's so what is it? It's what does it mean to own something is, you know, unfortunately in one way, like really cut and dry, with as kind of what Katie was suggesting, with our laws in our society, but also like what is ownable is becoming so broad. It's kind of it's an increasingly strange question on what can be owned and what cannot.
I think Linda was next.
Hi. Yeah. I was thinking about that ownership also. This keeps falling. And maybe more I was thinking about not of legally or financially owning something, but just having experiences or knowledge or things you know, or maybe just less strictly ownership. I mean, I can share my experiences with someone by being compassionate with them and listening, by using what I have or what I know as a tool to share my time or my listening, so to speak. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure where I was really going with that, but just the different way of looking at actually owning, maybe not so much as a legal or financial or thing you have a contract over.
I think Jeff and then Gathel.
Well, this ownership question is really intriguing. And, you know, I think about it from an absolute sense. I, you know, this pencil is sitting here on my desk and, you know, I don't even know where it came from. is it mine? Well, I guess so. It's kind of in my orbit. But in an absolute sense, given that we're a spark from a Flintstone, our life is short. This pencil is one day going to re-enter the molecules of the universe and be owned by the universe. So
Gaffel?
I think sometimes in our culture, speak broadly of American and European culture as well, ownership oftentimes is meant not only to have the right to use something, but to exclude the rights of other people. And one particular thing I can think of is in California, Northern California, there is a very wealthy man that owns some oceanfront property. Now, everyone has access to the ocean in California, but he is trying to enforce his ownership rights to exclude anyone else from going to that portion of the beach. So I think, you know, oftentimes ownership isn't really not so much wanting the benefit of the item, but excluding others from that item, which is definitely still.
So let's see. I think Jinryu and then Franklin and then Drew just jump. I think it's Jinryu and then Franklin and then Drew, go ahead and jump in if you have anything you want to say.
Yeah, let's go ahead and have Jinryu and Franklin go, and then I have just a little bit to wrap up.
Well, I was thinking apropos of what Gathel just brought up, because I'm from Florida and people do own the beach if they live on it. So it's very common. I was so shocked when I moved out here. It's very common to be walking along the beach and see a private beach, no access sign, and you have to turn around and go back. But I was really before that thinking about what we own and how much of it is being destroyed by climate change and other things. I'm thinking particularly of fire. You know, now what do you own? You've put your whole life into this home or this property or this field, this orchard, whatever, and it's gone. It really does make you question the value of ownership. And I was just wanted to comment briefly on the second one. What does it mean to give freely of all that you can? I think it means without begrudging anything. And so, and it's not always easy. Things come up. And by the time I'm ready to give freely on this, that, or the other topic, event, person, whatever, something may have happened and now I'm in a hurry and I have to go. But really, to me, what it means is completely getting away from all that. Just, you know, don't make anybody feel bad. Just make them feel that they're the most important thing you could do anything for in the moment that you're giving. Pay attention, to me, is what that means.
Hey, Franklin, I think you're up.
Okay. I'm trying to get away from the material concept of ownership, you know, because I think it's really easy to go into the space of possessions and this and that. And I kind of back off and I was thinking, well, what do I really own besides all this crap that's in my room right now? And I can't think of anything. I mean, I don't really own my time, you know. I don't really even own my experiences because research has shown that those change over time. Like even your memories, you know, they're not the same as the actual event. So it's a really great question because I really can't, I mean, I guess I own my body, but even that isn't really true because my body's is changing and, you know, So this idea of ownership, I think, requires this fixation of things, right? Like things are set, and I don't think that's really ever true. So yeah, it's kind of a mind-blowing question. I don't know. So once we get away from all the material stuff, I think it's a really good question. And I think it's kind of made me realize that I don't really own anything. So, and that's good, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, so Franklin, that was my thought as well. And so I'm going to take this thing kind of down the path that Franklin and Jeff were taking it. So I'll just kind of jump to the point here in Aiken's book. He's talking about this monk that is stealing other monk stuff, and the Roshi and the other monks are trying to figure out like what to do about it. And Aiken writes, "I imagine the literal position. He violated the second precept. And the absolute position, there is no stealing and nothing to be stolen." So sometime back, like years ago, I had the thought, like, do I own my car? No, I own my experience of having a car. Like this idea of ownership is just like, it's fake. It's a construct. So I guess that's how I feel about it. Going to resume sharing here. So do we own our own experiences? Franklin, you're saying no. I guess what I mean by this is maybe the only thing we own, and I'm not even sure about this, is like our experiences like right here in this moment. Because certainly it's hard to say they belong to something else. So if the whole idea, one of the big ideas behind Zen is this lack of distinction between self and other, right? So how can there be ownership if self and other, there's not that distinction made? Additionally, the slide here mentions impermanence. So if impermanence is the way things really are, then like to own something, you have to like re-own it in each moment. And that seems like, it kind of seems like a ridiculous concept to me. So I just wrote, it's just silly. My thought here was, when we understand we do not truly own anything, we reduce craving and suffering and thus achieve a peaceful mind. So Aiken writes, mind is peace. And because it is peace, it is also broad and generous. There is no thought of obtaining. So there is full appreciation for the thing as it is. So my kind of like ultimate conclusion after reading stuff and just kind of like, I think most of the material just kind of came from like reflecting and chewing on it. Is it really not stealing really means to free yourself from the dream of ownership, to drop entirely the concept of possession, the words mine, yours, ours, theirs, cease to have meaning as they are recognized as mental constructs supporting the mistaken belief of one's enduring self-nature. I suppose this is maybe like a more, this is like the view kind of in the absolute. I have to confess that like this thought is maybe not that useful in guiding your day-to-day living. But if we do dwell on the absolute, then the mind and its object are one. There's always this like in the realm of the whatever dharma and the precept. And so I think like what's meant by the realm of the unattainable dharma is that there's like, if you, in the absolute sense, there's nothing to be attained. So my final remark here in my concluding slide here, because it's 9 p.m., is that I think all this stuff is interesting and worth exploring, this idea of absolute, but kind of in the relative. It's really, drilling in the absolute is maybe not going to be all that helpful or even possible, like for even a small percentage of your day. So I would say, don't worry about it too much. And, just kind of keep this idea of not stealing and giving freely in the back of your mind, make it part of your compass and follow your feet. And so I am done.
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you for listening. And
yes,
hopefully it was helpful.
End with our verse. Dedicate the merit of this Sangha meeting to all, so that they may be able to obtain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajna Paramita. Thanks, Drew.
Drew, I loved it.
Yep, thank you, Drew.
I haven't seen PowerPoint in so long.
I live in the dang thing, so
I think it's a great way to put your thoughts down and organize. It was very good talk.
Yeah, and this talk like really couldn't have come at a better or a worse time. I've been like super busy right now, so I'm like trying to do my regular work in this, but so it was a good opportunity. Like researching this stuff kind of got me to like practice more with Zazen, which has really been helpful for like supporting this really busy time at work. Because like I can't be agonizing about how much work I have, because that's just like piling extra stuff on top of the work. So this is really great for me. And so I very, very useful from my perspective as well.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Drew. I thought it was really good. And I guess one of those rare times when just the questions that question you asked about ownership was like super powerful for me. And while I realize we are in the absolute space, what's kind of cool is just a little bit of it might be hitting my relative space. So it's great. It's really, really profound. And I have no idea how that's going to affect me going forward, but it feels like somehow it will.
By the way, Drew, Island was a book that greatly influenced me very early on, although there was a 40-year gap between reading it and becoming a Buddhist. It did give me the feeling of having always been a Buddhist because of the ideas it planted in my mind early on. So I loved to see it there that you held it up. It's like, oh yeah, there it is.
Yeah, it just popped up at the right time for me. So I'm glad to hear that it influenced somebody else as well. That's great.
Oh, and I also like Fight Club too. That's great. Although you didn't quote my favorite, which is, you remember the scene where there's like they're marching in the outdoors in the mud and stuff, and there's the loudspeaker and says, "You are not a special snowflake," and they're like repeating all these other things.
You were all part of the same compost heap. Yes, I can almost recite that movie from memory, but
I think I need to watch it again.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, Jinryu.
Good night.
Good night, everyone.
Night.
Good night, and thank you, Drew. That was great.
Welcome.